Though the method of land disposal will determine the money gained by the borough relative to the costs of land identification, road construction, and so on, the land entitlement has a rough value of $300 million. But it's far from in the bag or in the bank. Not only is there the restrictive time frame for state approval, but there's a hitch within the borough. Some 25,000 acres of the borough selections are in the area down the Richardson Highway, south of town, past Eielson Air Force Base, that comprises the Salter Precinct, and they're seeking to separate and form their own third-class borough. If they succeed in the quest for secession, petitions are now before the state's Boundary Commission, that, admits Cronk, quote, could complicate matters. A hearing in Salter on the municipal entitlements is scheduled for tonight. As Fairbanks North Star Borough Land Management Officer Al Cronk said at the close of our interview,
this winter's going to be very interesting.
Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. The university wants a budget increase, the borough wants to study a gas plant, the city hopes to revitalize the downtown area, the Fairbanks Environmental Center would like to limit access to the Hall Road, and the city of North Pole figures anything will be more than last year. Those are some of the items on Fairbanks' legislative wish list. Though not everyone has their list together yet, most of the planners are thinking big. The University of Alaska, with its administrative center in Fairbanks, is hoping to emerge from the tightly controlled financial situation it's been in. Sherman Carter is the university's vice president for finance.
And the university has requested a 19% increase. The bulk of the money is to take care of inflationary needs and to finance existing programs adequately. And in some of those programs, if the budget is received, will be expanded. But there are not any absolutely new programs that are provided for in what the university's requested.
Included in that two-foot-thick budget request are funds to increase faculty salaries and support for rural education and Native outreach programs. The Fairbanks North Star Borough is still developing its wish list in conjunction with the city. That way, says Community Information Officer Ben Harding, they hope to avoid duplicate requests. They've already gotten the money for one of them.
We put in $500,000 for feasibility studies for gas conditioning and processing, and basically the governor has, on Monday, made that announcement. The Assembly, for example, one of their top priorities for capital projects is the extension of the steam lines to city steam lines to various schools. And you see, now that's an example where really that's something that would obviously very much overlap into the city area.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it would have to be coordinated. Some of the other things that are being looked at are the Civic and Convention Center. That would be one complex or one project. And the other is a cultural slash sports slash recreational complex. Some of the other things that we've put in for, again, that have to be coordinated with the city is creating strip parks on both sides of the banks of the Chena, more urban beautification in terms of planting of trees, not just in tubs, but trees along some of the major highways entering into town. Another thing is landscaping of Airport Road, this type of thing. So it's a combination of, sort of your more traditional capital projects, such as civic centers, convention centers, whatnot, sort of some studies, like the natural gas studies, which basically have already been covered, beautification, and also some energy issues such as the extension of the steam line to the various schools, also looking into some insulation retrofits.
The total request is between $150 and $200 million, for, as Harding said, quote, anything we think we might want. The motto was, think big. The city of Fairbanks has requests totaling $85,150,000, says city grants writer Candace Magnuson. That's broken down into 14 items, some of them overlapping with the borough. Community projects head the list.
Their number one priority is funding for a downtown development authority, and they are looking at getting $10 million to use to help leverage private money for projects downtown, including a major downtown mall, parking structure, civic convention center, or other developments. What they want is to have a citizen-based downtown development authority, which, as projects evolve, would have this fund of money to help perhaps make a private project feasible, use it for any kinds of public works improvements that need to be made.
Other items include downtown utilidors, roads, expansion of the water treatment plant and other power projects, improvement of traffic control, a government office building, upgrading of Alaskaland, a model district heating project that burns coal or natural gas, general assistance funds for private projects, and bikeways. Last year, the city had no legislative program, though some projects were funded for between $500,000 and $800,000.
It was a very small amount, which is one of the things that triggered the council wanting to have a program this year, that, of course, in the surplus oil revenues.
One of the shortest wish lists was that of the Fairbanks Environmental Center, though length was not proportional to importance. John Adams is the executive director.
Probably at the top of the list is some reform to the state lands disposal program to make it more responsive to local community desires and to public use values such as wildlife and recreation land and timberland and even mineral values in some areas. We are also planning, we being the conservation and native communities collectively, on introducing some sort of haul road legislation which will restrict travel on the haul road to industrial uses and possibly to tour buses. At any rate, you could state that in a negative way and say we're going to resist any bills to open the haul road. On both of those issues, I think we're going to be, you're going to see us trying to take offensives and come up with some alternatives rather than just fighting bills that, other people introduce that we think are bad. And then we'll be watchdogging very closely any legislation that comes up relating to the Susitna Hydropower Project.
Adams admits that the Environmental Center's positions don't exactly dovetail with positions publicly espoused by the Fairbanks delegation, with the exception of lands, but he feels that some of the less vocal members may be sympathetic to their attitudes on the Hall Road and hydroelectric projects. The city of North Pole, home of Santa Claus House, has put in for a city hall-community center combination, which was denied last year. That totals $1.4 million. City lights are another priority for $75,000. Those relatively modest requests reflect Mayor Carlita Lewis's feeling that
I think, you know, can't get too greedy here.
Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Since 1965, the Fairbanks North Star Borough has been in the process of selecting vacant, unappropriated state land within the borough. About 82,000 acres have been selected, about 7,000 acres of that land has been processed to patent, and selections have been approved on another 10,000 acres. In 1963, the Mandatory Borough Act gave municipalities 10% of the vacant, unappropriated, unreserved lands within the municipality. For various reasons, however, processing was not completed on municipal selections. And in 1978, changes in legislation under House Bill 133 gave quantity grants rather than a percentage of land. 112,000 acres for Fairbanks out of over 1.5 million acres currently under state control. Subsequent legislation, House Bill 33, passed in 1979, placed the additional requirement that all selections must be made and approved by the state before October 1980, or the borough gets nothing. The person responsible for making the selections is Al Kronk, land management officer for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. According to Kronk, it's quite possible that the state may use delaying tactics to prevent the borough from getting its entitlement. And that's not the only problem Kronk sees with the selection process.
We're in a bit of a bind. I don't think the legislature will let us down. I think that they will accommodate delays of this nature and extend our selection timeframes. The other bad aspect is that our selection opportunities are being severely curtailed. Now, if we can't select land that has utility for the public, there really isn't too much point in obtaining the land.
On what basis are you selecting the land? What kinds of criteria are you using?
Well, let me give you the criteria that we're on the areas that we are not selecting. That's the easy one. We are not selecting any land with known mineral values. If we know about it, and we're being checked quite regularly by the mining community, we do not get the subsurface estate, and we do not believe it's proper to split the surface and the subsurface estate. So we're avoiding mineral land. We cannot economically manage forest lands. unless we put our whole entitlement into forest land, we can't get enough land to economically manage it. So we're avoiding that. And recognizing the state already has the procedures and the people to carry out this management. We're not selecting agriculture land. And again, the state has enough laws on the books that the agricultural interest can be served by the state. And again, we only get the agricultural interest on lands that are classified for agriculture. So we really have no incentive to become involved in that. The criteria that we are using to select lands is we're trying to select the best land for any purpose that's available. Now, we started the selection process with Fairbanks as the center, and we've selected any land that has utility within the Fairbanks township.
And what do you mean by utility?
Well, if you got a tussock swamp underlain with permafrost and massive ice, we don't feel that it has a great deal of utility. So we've avoided those areas. We're looking for good soils or areas that we know have a certain value.
That umbrella of certain value will be reflected when the borough disposes of the land it receives. According to Kronk, eventually close to 90% will be disposed of into private ownership. Just how, he doesn't know yet.
Right now, our ordinance only allows public sale, and public auction, in fact. That can change and very likely will change. The one area that we wish to avoid in most instances is leasing. The university's had that for a number of years, and it's failed miserably. After just a relatively few years, the lease exceeds the ability to use the land. There are areas, however, that leasing is very desirable, and that's in the industrial sites. One thing that we need is a vehicle whereby disposal of municipal lands can be by application. You know, people identify tracts that they'd like to see disposed of.
Right now, the majority of land selected is unzoned. There is unrestricted use. The parcels are, says Kronk, very large. Before they are disposed of for sale, the primary road net must be laid in and surveyed.
If the road's already provided, if the pieces are large pieces particularly, wouldn't that open it up for, say, real estate developers as opposed to private individuals?
This is a possibility. There's a number of ways the borough can go. We can sell tracts that can be developed by the individual or the realtor or the subdivider. Or we can contract, much the way the state is now doing. The state issues a contract and take this tract of land and subdivide it. So there's a lot of alternatives.
Though the method of land disposal will determine the money gained by the borough relative to the costs of land identification, road construction, and so on, the land entitlement has a rough value of $300 million, but it's far from in the bag or in the bank. Not only is there the restrictive time frame for state approval, but there's a hitch within the borough. Some 25,000 acres of the borough's selections are in the area down the Richardson Highway, south of town, past Allison Air Force Base, that comprises the Salcha Precinct, and they're seeking to separate and form their own third-class borough. If they succeed in the quest for secession, that, admits Kronk, quote, could complicate matters. A hearing is scheduled for Thursday evening. As Fairbanks North Star Borough Land Management Officer Al Kronk said at the close of our interview,
this winter's going to be very interesting.
Karen McPherson in Fairbanks. Rusty Walker is a young businessman who likes books. He wrote one of his own, for that matter, the Alaska Corporation Manual, published by That New Publishing Company of Fairbanks, Alaska. That's its name, That New Publishing Company, and Rusty Walker is the president.
I hate to see someone come in from New York for 2 weeks and then sit down in the bush for 2 days and write the great American Alaskan novel and then fly back home and continue to spread the gobbledygook about Alaska that's still getting out. To change that, you have to start doing your own thing.
Walker's thing is control, the kind of control of the product that he feels only a publisher can have. His primary mission? To present Alaska from an Alaskan point of view through a resident publishing company. His. But that's not how That New Publishing Company got started.
I got into publishing because I had a manuscript that I wanted published, and after I began doing investigation, I felt that either it wouldn't be taken by any publisher. If it did, it wouldn't be handled properly. So I just took my business background and began looking at publishing as a business and began approaching it that way. And I said to myself, if this book or my first book is a success, then I'll continue doing it in other areas on Alaska subjects. And that's the way it happened.
In effect, it sounds like you formed a vanity press to publish your own book.
Basically, yes. You would have to say that, because the author is obviously providing the money for the book. But it was a matter of taking that knowledge and then expanding it as a commercial publisher for other works.
Producing limited editions of hand-set, watermarked paper, finely bound books is not Walker's vision.
That's certainly not the way to make money in publishing, and that's part of what we intend to do.
Given the number of publishing giants, the outfits in New York and Chicago and San Francisco with big buildings and sculptures in front, and the statistics and the numbers of books being published, how is it feasible for an individual like yourself, for a small company, to make it a financial go?
The bigness of the conglomerates is the single most important thing that works in our direction. They're so big, so massive, that they cannot move very fast. They cannot look at a market and see what's happening. They cannot get specific. They have to be all things to all people, and therefore they're really nothing to no one. So they have the money and the volume to just keep going because they're in the middle of the stream. But their return on the dollar is less than 5%, while many of the very successful and specific independent presses are returning 30% on their dollar, because they can sit down and see what audience they want to meet and meet the needs of that audience.
Given that your emphasis is Alaskan material, though not exclusively, since you're about to publish a book on a lynching that mm-hmm. happened in the lower 48, do you feel that you're in direct competition with Alaska Northwest Publishing Company?
No, not really. I think if you look at the books that we've brought out in our editions are now all hardbound editions. And we like to look at our books as the type of books that someone will say, we want to see a serious part of Alaska. We want to expand our living room library.
The three titles, all hardcover books, that new publishing company has brought out so far don't quite fit Walker's description. There's his corporation manual, a thin volume that concludes with an admonition to get a lawyer and or accountant when needed, and a list of agencies that will provide free information for fledgling corporations, and two other books, one by journalist Jerry Fears entitled Boom, Cash, and Balderdash, a collection of previously published commentaries on the pipeline years, and Edith Rohde's Letters from Alaska, a collection of letters to family and friends that had also been published in the local newspaper. Those last two are the sort that you'd send to relatives in the lower 48 when you're out of ideas but want to send something typically Alaskan. But serious reference works they're not. And in terms of possible overlap with Alaska Northwest Publishing Company, it has come up.
Jerry's manuscript was with Alaska Northwest Publishing. And at that time, I just said, I would like to do that book. And we had sort of talked about it before. In Edie Rohde's case, she did come to me. And in actuality, that again was offered to Alaska Northwest, too. And in other cases, the other manuscript that Jerry Fears is working on for us now about the Alaska Baseball League, that came from us internally. We said we'd like to publish that kind of book.
Walker is branching out into other kinds of books as well, The Black Experience. It's a subject Walker feels close to and thinks is as misrepresented or underrepresented as Alaskana. The expansion of the line is another step toward reaching a national audience. Not that the Alaskan books have failed to do that.
The important part about Boom, Cash, and Balderdash is that we were able to exceed our sales of the book, have more sales outside of Alaska than inside. And to us, that's the important part about making it work, because we want to tell the people outside of Alaska about Alaska. Most people inside will know about Alaska or deal with it or what have you, but we think we're really getting significant when we're making those sales outside.
If those sales continue, both outside and within the state, that new publishing company won't be so new anymore. But the name, says Rusty Walker, will stay the same. Karen McPherson in Fairbanks.